Life Audio.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations.
We want families to come here and gain insightful strategies that empower them to successfully teach diverse learners at home.
Hosted by founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool, Peggy Ployer.
Our goal is that these powerful weekly conversations will boost your confidence to cultivate the best at-home learning environment for your student.
For more homeschool resources, go to spedhomeschool.com. You're listening to Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer. We'll start the conversation with Peggy and her guests next.
Is it hard to spark meaningful conversations with your kids? Whether you're a homeschool hero, planning activities for the next family vacation, or simply gathering around the dinner table, we've got something that can help. Introducing the Daily Family Conversation Starter by best-selling author Katie Clemens. This remarkable book offers 365 imaginative ways to connect with your children in just 5 minutes each day, with prompts like, "Who made you laugh today?" or "What would you do if you had a tail?" These simple questions open up a world of laughter, curiosity, and deeper connections. From dinner time to sleepy time, the Daily Family Conversation Starter is your key to creating memories that will last a lifetime. Don't wait to transform your family's daily routine into an adventure of discovery and fun. Grab your copy of the Daily Family Conversation Starter today, wherever books are sold.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool, a nonprofit that empowers families to home educate diverse learners. To learn more, visit spedhomeschool.com. Here's Peggy Ployer.
Today, we are going to learn how to use neurodevelopmental strategies to help your student reach educational goals with special guest, Dr. Jan Vidal. Welcome, Jan.
Hey, Peggy. Good to see you again.
Yes, it's good to have you back on the show. We had planned this conversation a while ago, and we had to reschedule. And so I am glad that we finally found time for this, because it is one of those topics that that parents are always looking for different strategies. And neurodevelopmental strategies, they warm my heart whenever I hear you talk about them, because they're just so practical and they really meet the need of the student. So if you're just joining us, and I know this wasn't on our typical schedule for a Tuesday broadcast, this is an extra one this week, but I just encourage you to stay here, join us, share this broadcast with other people if you're watching live, and I see people are popping on right now. We would love for you to be part of this conversation, and Jan has so much wisdom to share. I promise you, it is worth your hour. So if you're watching, you want to join our conversation, put your questions or comments in the feed, whether you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, and we would love to have you join this conversation with us. So, Jan, as we are getting started, maybe some of our viewers don't know you, but I would love for them to get to know you. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, your homeschooling background, your professional background, and just why you're so passionate about this topic?
Okay, well, that's quite the story. It's been 30 years.
Wow.
this year, since I started my neurodevelopmental journey of homeschooling my child. But previous to that, 5 years before that, God showed me homeschooling. I was a certified teacher, but had no idea about homeschooling, and found out later that it had just barely become legal when I found out. So that dates me pretty good. But I started homeschooling with the traditional approach because that's all I knew.
Right.
And I was homeschooling my very atypical, challenged daughter. And I had both ends of the spectrum, basically, when we started. And after about 5 years of traditionally doing everything I knew to do, I had just about given up because I didn't know what else to do. We weren't getting very, very far. Reading was very low. Her IQ was low too, so that was a big challenge. But
And I'm sure a lot of these parents that are listening can relate to that. And so I'm so glad that you have a story that goes beyond that. So so how did this all change?
So we were changing churches, and God kept saying, go over there to that church. And it was like, but it's 30 minutes away, you know?
Oh.
I kept arguing. But I was obedient, praise the Lord. And that's where I found out about the neurodevelopmental approach. And it just changed everything for her. And at that point, I had been looking, I mean, she was 15 years old, so I had been looking a long time for help for her. And it made such a difference that it was basically like God said, okay, other people are going to be looking for help, and I want to use you to tell them. So that's basically what I've been doing ever since. And now I have the opportunity to not only have homeschooled my children, but help with my grandchildren.
That is such a blessing.
I didn't know if you knew about that. We're a multi-generational home. So we're all together. And so I get to help with their homeschool as well. In fact, I remember thinking, because my daughter was pregnant with some of the curriculum that I was creating. And it was such a struggle to get through that I thought, that's what kept me going, is my grandchild might benefit from this one day.
Oh.
And we're actually used to it with all three of them. So that's a bit of my beginning.
Yeah. Whatever we need to motivate us, right?
Exactly. I had to get through it, but it was a bit of a challenge.
Well, that's awesome. And just that, you know, your story just keeps continuing as you're obedient and just following what the next steps are. And I'm going to put your website up here. It's brainsprints.com. If you want to check that out, we'll talk some more about at the end about specific resources that Jan has. But that's just a plethora of resources and help for families just in various struggles. And then, you know, the struggle. And so, and so what a place to come from to share. I mean, that's what we do here at Sped Homeschool too. I would not have created Sped Homeschool if I would not have had the struggle. So I think, it's encouragement for our families. You know, we do go through struggles, but they have a purpose. And if we keep pressing through them and develop that endurance, what comes out of them, it can be amazing if you just allow God to work through you in that.
Yes.
So great encouragement. So it just, you know, I can tell that this just spurs you on and keeps you going. I'm sure you just have to think back to those struggles when you're meeting with families, and that just gives you the energy that you need to just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, it really does keep me going when I hear, you know, after 4 months, this has changed and that's changed, and they're doing better here and they're doing better there. And so that really does keep me going for sure.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So what exactly are neurodevelopmental strategies? Because I'm sure some of our parents have never heard of that before. And so that's kind of where I would love to start, is just what are we, you know, what is this we're talking about in general?
Well, just to give you a little background on neurodevelopment and the approach is more at trying to find the root cause of the struggle instead of just using strategies. But one of the things that we really depend on and encourage families is something called the three keys to learning. And that is frequency, intensity, and duration. So frequency is like how often they hear something or are presented with the same information. Intensity is how strong it is. Like if you were going to teach history, but you didn't like history, it wouldn't be very intense for your learner, because you okay, the first president was, and, you know, it would be kind of la la la. So if you're going to teach history and your child, say, loves horses, for instance, you might teach history through, you know, the horses used in chariots and the horses used in the Oregon Trail and, you know, those kinds of things that really spur their interest. So intensity has a number of different ways that you get that intensity. One is through interest. And the other is through time. You know, we tend to spend a lot of time like mimicking a public school when we don't need to as homeschoolers, you know. As far as how much time you spend, you don't need an hour for math. You need to spend 10 minutes and not leave them alone. So it would make it a lot more intense if you did a problem and they did a problem. So that goes back to the frequency, how often they see it done correctly. Right. And then the intensity that keeps their interest there as you show them one. And then you're right there to make sure they don't make a mistake.
Right.
You know, it really gets very unintense when they've been sitting there for 30 minutes and their attention is gone and they've done a bunch of problems wrong, and then they give it to you and you go, oh, you know, oh my gosh. And then what usually gets the intensity on that page, it's like, this one's wrong, this one's wrong, this one's wrong.
Oh, yes. The way we don't want the intensity to make an impact.
Exactly. Exactly.
After a word from our sponsor, we'll dive back into this conversation.
Is it hard to spark meaningful conversations with your kids? Whether you're a homeschool hero, planning activities for the next family vacation, or simply gathering around the dinner table, we've got something that can help. Introducing the Daily Family Conversation Starter by best-selling author Katie Clemens. This remarkable book offers 365 imaginative ways to connect with your children in just 5 minutes each day, with prompts like, "Who made you laugh today?" or "What would you do if you had a tail?" These simple questions open up a world of laughter, curiosity, and deeper connections. From dinner time to sleepy time, the Daily Family Conversation Starter is your key to creating memories that will last a lifetime. Don't wait to transform your family's daily routine into an adventure of discovery and fun. Grab your copy of the Daily Family Conversation Starter today, wherever books are sold. Is it hard to spark meaningful conversations with your kids? Whether you're a homeschool hero, planning activities for the next family vacation, or simply gathering around the dinner table, we've got something that can help. Introducing the Daily Family Conversation Starter by best-selling author Katie Clemens. This remarkable book offers 365 imaginative ways to connect with your children in just 5 minutes each day, with prompts like, "Who made you laugh today?" or "What would you do if you had a tail?" These simple questions open up a world of laughter, curiosity, and deeper connections. From dinner time to sleepy time, the Daily Family Conversation Starter is your key to creating memories that will last a lifetime. Don't wait to transform your family's daily routine into an adventure of discovery and fun. Grab your copy of the Daily Family Conversation Starter today, wherever books are sold.
The This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool. Go to spedhomeschool.com to get resources and support for teaching your unique learner at home.
This strategy, these kind of neurodevelopmental strategies are putting input into the brain instead of always asking for output. Yeah. Most of our curriculum are very much output-based. And so you're asking all the time. It's almost like, and it really is, you're testing them. When you ask them, it's a test.
Yeah.
So if you change it around and give them input, and then ask them, then their chances of success are a whole lot better. They feel good about themselves, and they've really gotten the information they need to do good, what we call output, which is writing something down or giving you an answer. So frequency is how often, intense is how strong the information comes in. And then duration is short periods of time, but over time. So one of the strategies we use in our product that's for math facts, it's called rapid recall, because that's what you want, is rapid recall, is where the child sees and hears and says and writes five math facts 14 times in a day. And you go, oh my goodness, what? How long does that take? Well, it really only takes 6 minutes because you're inputting it. And only two of those outputs are where they're, are two of those times of the 14 are output. So after 60 exposures of the correct information, with that frequency, intensity, and duration, you know, 1 minute here, 2 minutes here, 1 minute here, 2 minutes here, then it starts to come out on those speed drills that we notoriously put in front of our children and say, do this faster.
But we've never equipped them to do it faster.
And So that's kind of, you know, in a nutshell, the one of the main strategies for this. So if we get the brain organized through movement, and we get the brain processing better, that's their short-term memory. And then we make sure that that information is going to the right part of their brain so that they can get it back out. Those are the fundamental building blocks of neurodevelopment. But, you know, more of the strategy is what we were talking about with the three keys to learning. So if you're at home and you go, I'm just so frustrated with this, with this phonics program, for instance, I've tried three different phonics programs and it's just not working. Then you have to look at, maybe it's not the curriculum that's the problem, right? It's how the brain is using that information. I mean, my daughter could, I taught her with the writing road to reading. That's way back there where many other things are based on that. I think Barton is based on that and a number of other phonics programs. But there were 70 phonograms. She knew the sound of every one. You could hold it up and she knew it. But she could not hold those pieces together of several different phonograms to get the word out. And that was because her processing was so low.
So you're going back to the root, like you were talking about with this methodology or, you know, just the approach gives you versus, trying to change up the curriculum or make that different. So that makes a lot of sense, you know, why these strategies or approach works for students who have those struggles. And we keep saying, well, I'm going to put it back on their IEP, you know, or, you know, the individual education plan that we have this year. This is our goal to meet this. And we just put a new curriculum in place instead of changing the approach as to how we do it, thinking that the curriculum will somehow magically change what's going on underneath.
Yeah, and so many children with special needs have this low processing challenge. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say 99% of the kids I see with ADD have it. And with any delays, developmental delays, they always have this low processing ability. But the good news is there's something you can do about it. You can test and find out where they are. Mm-hmm. And then using those keys of frequency, intensity, and duration twice a day for 2 minutes, you work on this processing with an intense, you know, listening time that's got lots of rewards. Mm-hmm. And then their processing starts to come up. So after, I don't know, it was probably close to a year that we changed our reading strategy. Her reading came up. And then her processing also came up to where she could use phonics for words that she didn't know, you know, just by sight.
Yeah, that's a great testimony of your daughter and just how that helped her.
Yeah, it was just amazing how the difference, because I was just basically like pretty much everybody in the homeschool movement. It's like phonics is the way to teach reading. So you have to use phonics. But what I found was phonics was not working for her. So if phonics isn't working, you have to change. You can't just keep, you know, we've done phonics for 5 years. 5 years.
So something's going on, yeah.
And she still wasn't reading. I was tenacious, you know. But she could not hold those pieces together. So the getting to the root of why the challenge is, you know, is a big thing.
Yeah.
One of the things I guess I also wanted to share is, you know, if the child is having trouble reading, you not only look at the processing where they're holding pieces together, but what's going on with their eyes? You know, are their eyes tracking the way they should? Or are they kind of jumping along the way so it's giving confusing information to the brain?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we look at that, you know, is there central detail vision working well? You know, can they see right in the center, or is that developmental issue something that's plaguing them in their reading? Some people that see this symptom, they go, you know, they skip little words. It's just a little word. It's an A or a Z. And they just skip right over it. Well, if your central vision isn't working, it could be that they didn't even see it. That's why they skipped over it.
Got it. Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. We have one of our viewers watching live, Lakendra. She said, thank you for the tip on intensity. It's not, I mean, even people that are educated, you know, as teachers and are in the schools, don't learn a lot of these things that you're talking about. And so I think we feel sometimes ill-equipped as parents teaching our own children at home. But, you know, conversations like this with experts like Jan, this is what's equipping you to teach well, especially for those struggling students that we focus on in the show. And such good advice, Jan. You know, it is those things that we miss. I remember my daughter telling me after we used an online math program for a year, Mom, can't you just sit with me? And it really rung in my ear when you talked about that, just sitting with them, increasing that intensity. She wanted that intensity to increase. And I never really connected those two till you said that, because it really helped her focus better. Instead of just watching somebody on the screen teaching math, it was that physical presence of somebody there going back and forth with her. And I learned that tip from you years ago about the doing the problems for them and with them. And I think that was what was impactful for her.
Yeah, even through, you know, if you're teaching your typical kids algebra, that rule also applies. And the interesting thing is that so many people go, you know, they just panic when you say sit with them because they've got this to do and that to do and something else to take care of and a baby doing this and, you know, all of that. But if you really stop to think about it, if you're there with your child for 10 minutes and you're making sure they did not make a mistake, how much time are you saving in reteaching, having them have a bad attitude about doing it? Oh, I just can't do it. Or, you know, they think badly of themselves and they spend all this time in negative emotions.
Absolutely.
You know, instead of just getting through their math and having a high five at the end and going, whoa, you did so good. So it really saves you time in the long run if you really stop to think about it.
Yes, exactly. And catching them up with, you know, mistakes that they've made and just learning something wrong. It takes so much more time to correct what and unlearn what was just learned the wrong way.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we don't want them. We don't want them to make a mistake in their math facts because that cements it in the wrong way, or their math operations either.
Right.
So, and the same thing applies to reading. You know, so many of the children are having a struggle reading, but we found with a flash method of. Again, we're using that frequency, intensity, and duration. You've got 12 cards. You're showing it to them three times, playing a little game at the end. Say, show me this, show me that. And it takes about a minute to do that. You do that twice a day, and those words are really going to be cemented in their mind.
So we've talked a little bit about... the some of the reading, you know, just with phonics and some math with the math facts. What are some other subject specific like strategies using this neurodevelopmental type of lens approach that parents could really, you know, make applicable for a student that struggles in specific areas?
Okay, so one of the things that we like to do with this same frequency, intensity, and duration is make a recording of the important facts. But just, you're not reading to them on the recording. You're saying, let's say you're studying Columbus. The recording would say, Columbus sailed in 1492. He had three ships, the Nina, the Pinta, the Santa Maria. He was named the Admiral of the Ocean Sea. You know, just little, what I would call bits or bites of history. And then if you show them on a timeline where Columbus was, how did that relate to when Jesus came? How did that relate to when the pioneers are here, you know?
Right.
So, when I was in school, I hated history. It was just so yucky.
Same here. Yes.
To dates but it came alive when I started homeschooling.
Yes.
Because I found, you know, God's providence in that, you know, he really planned these things and it's his story and how they relate to different things like how the scientific age when after the Bible was in English. So it's like wisdom brought all of this inventions. So it's very, very important, I think, to make those connections for them.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus was around the Roman times. Instead of just teaching about Rome, you relate it to something. And then every year, if you go back to these key points, you know, maybe have 9 or 10 key points on your timeline and relate whatever you're studying to that. It really helps.
A great idea.
You just keep expanding the knowledge for that. It's actually, I found this from the principal approach. And you don't hear a lot about that now because it's so labor intensive for the families that it didn't just rise to popularity, but it changed my life, really, at looking at history by having these key points. Like I said, the Bible in English and the pioneers and the patriots and Moses and the law, you know, those key points that really changed history. So, again, you can, with history, you want to teach around an interest as well, as much as you can. Like I gave the...
Like the horses.
And so that's one way to teach it. And then with science, you can do those same key points on a recording. Or there was something I used years ago, and it didn't come full circle, but they just had little cards with key points of science on it. And they just went over those first vocabulary words. So if you give them kind of a basis of what to start with, vocabulary words, and then build on that through understanding, that's a really good way. You don't want to go through a big textbook.
I think that I felt that same thing with my kids, is that when they we started a new subject or topic, that a lot of times the words in whatever textbook or workbook that we used, it was unfamiliar, and it added so much anxiety to the learning, because they were struggling with what is this concept, and that now I'm having to learn new material with these new words put in, and to sort of be purposeful about teaching those words. I never even thought about that. That I love that tip.
So anything that you want to teach, even if, like, say you have a child that's struggling with sentence structure, for instance. Or even a nonverbal child, you give them one word to start with, you model it, you try to get a sound. And then when you say, when they say, you say, yes, mom. That's right, mom. And then let's say they're not nonverbal, but they just have very few words. So you give them the word, and they give it back to you, and then you give them a short phrase or a couplet.
Oh, okay.
Like brown bear, big brown bear. So you might show them a picture of a bear, and you say bear, and then you say brown bear, and then you say big brown bear. So you're just going from the minute to expanding a little bit at a time.
Right. And you're modeling, and you're doing that input like you had talked about earlier, instead of just expecting the output. But that's a whole different way of approaching that, because we so much just want our kids to mimic and say exactly what we're saying, and then increase it after they get the first part. But adding to that content before they're there, just as a way to model that, is that's got to be so profound
to help them. It really works well. And so what you want to be thinking of is, where's my child? What's the next step? So they're here and they're functioning here, but they're not going to go to the next step until you tell them what the next step is, or model the next step. That's what the teaching part is really all about. And for homeschoolers, you have such a gift, because you're able to do that all through the day.
When they're in the
bathtub, you know, soap makes bubbles. Whatever event that you're doing, then you can use that as a platform for learning.
That's so cool. Yes. So many just ways to build that in those conversations. And I know in the past, I've even talked to guests that have said, we've stopped even talking to our kids as much. I mean, we have these devices on us, and, but to be really purposeful and intentional about those moments that we have, those teaching moments, and using them to model the behavior, the learning, the goals of where we want our child to be, either when we're sitting and doing school books, or, you know, just in the car or wherever, the bathtub. So yeah, those are great.
So the one of the things I just wanted to mention that was hard for me, because my child was pretty much nonverbal till she was three, and then I couldn't get her to be quiet. But it's so hard because we're used to communicating with each other that if you have a nonverbal child, you often don't talk to them because they're not talking to you. They're not saying, what's that? You know, those kind of things. So you have to really get your mind wrapped around this, the input part of this, where you have to talk to them. You have to take the initiative. And so that's really important for those that have more severe issues like that.
Yeah, because I think we're programmed to do a response. You know, there's a question and response, and kids are, you know, typical kids are very good at asking questions. And that that is why they learn so quickly, is because they're so curious and they ask us so much. Yes. It makes us tired sometimes. But you're right. It's those kids who are nonverbal, who don't speak as much, or who have speech issues that we don't understand everything. And so we're not always inputting as much because either we don't understand the input that's needed, or we just don't even think about the input that we should be giving.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just don't think about it until you're prompted by somebody saying something, and it makes total sense. Once you hear it, it's like, oh yeah, they're not going to get more words if I don't give them any.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Those are some great things, just strategies in general. Do you have any others that...
For the subjects, I would just encourage you not to... fall into the trap of a big, thick textbook do more units and bites of information. Because you and I both know, we went through school, we went through those big textbooks.
Right.
What did we take away?
Not a whole lot.
Enough to pass the test, and then oftentimes it was gone.
Right.
Especially in biology for me. that's what we want to think about. We don't want to think volume for a child that's struggling. Mm. We want to think, what are the key points that they need to know? Right. And there's a series of books that actually does that. It's called What Your First Grader Needs to Know, What Your Second Grader Needs to Know, by, I think it's E.D. Hirsch is the author. They've been around for a while, but they really do have brought it down to where it's not a big, voluminous information that they need, but just key points for literacy. You know, he was actually a professor that was appalled at what his freshmen were coming in with as far as knowledge. And so he wrote a book called The Dictionary of Cultural Literacy. And then he just started going down until he got to kindergarten.
Wow.
And so that's a resource I use for my families a lot when they feel like they're, I call it gap panic. Do you know what I mean by that?
Oh, yes. I know what you mean by that. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. If I don't do this or that or the other, you just panic that they'll never get it.
Right. Yeah. It was like you've hit this big void in space and you're getting sucked in.
But with this, you can be pretty assured that at each grade level, you're getting, you know, the basic information in, and then take off on their interests. That's the other thing that you can really do as a homeschooler, is if they're struggling with reading and they're reading about the fourth grade level, there's a series of books that I love called The Childhood of Famous Americans. And so it has fictional biographies of these famous people. But most of the book is what they did as a child.
Oh, like, that's cool. So it's relational. They can actually, instead of what an adult did that a child doesn't understand at all. Yeah.
Like about the last chapter is what they did as an adult that made him be a famous person. But it's like childhood stories of these famous people that, again, like you say, it makes them relatable. And reading those to them or them reading them, I think it's about fourth grade, maybe third grade. Some of them are third grade. But, you know, if they're interested in baseball, they read about Babe Ruth. And if they're interested in this, that, or the other, they read about that famous person. Or you bring those in as an interest study for a certain period of history that you're learning. Right. So those have been very, very valuable. And I think it helps to put destiny in the children.
Sometimes
the parents, you know, one of the things that I feel like that I'm supposed to do is help the parents not mourn over their child's future. God has a destiny for them. And sometimes we get in that a little bit of a pity party realm of, why me and what's going to happen to my child and stuff. And God wants us to let go of that kind of thing and just really press into Him and know that everybody's here for a purpose. So,
Yes, absolutely. That's great advice and encouragement because we can get so down and so stuck, like you're talking about those gaps that they tend to just like veer us off the road of, you know, the purpose that why we're homeschooling and why we have all, you know, we have all these advantages. There are some homeschoolers though that do have to write IEPs, individual education plans because of the laws in their state and they have specific goals. So I love the resource that you pointed out about what your child needs to know by, because I think you can take some of those and make those into goals that are measurable and within the IEP for your student. If you just go back, like Jan said, and say, where are we at? What have we learned? What haven't we learned? That's a great strategy, again, for meeting those goals and, of course, building that foundation. Because as we know, if you don't have what the precursor is to what the child needs to know next, you need to go back.
Yes, and the skill. And just to mention that, you know, we've got a lot of children these days being labeled as dysgraphic. So instead of having another handwriting program or, you know, another pencil grasp or whatever, you want to go back to what the root is. So in our view, it's a poor connection, poor connection from the brain to the fingers. I mean, I had this little boy one time. The story was he was 10 years old, really, really smart, but he came home one day and just threw himself on the couch and just was so upset because he couldn't function the way the teachers were asking him to function as far as handwriting. In his brilliance, he said to his mom, "I don't know how I'm supposed to do that when my hand feels like fluff." Fluff? Your hand feels like fluff? You know what that tells me? Is the pathway was not well to his hand because how do you write a B with fluff? You know?
Right. Yeah.
So it's important to build those pathways because you can do a writing curriculum all day long. I tried to teach my daughter to fold towels. And I thought anybody could fold a towel, you know. You just put the corners together. Well, she could not fold a towel. It was a mangled mess every time. So what I found out was that she didn't have good connections from her brain to her hands and didn't know where she is in space. So how do you put those things together if you don't even know where you are in space?
Yeah, right.
So, So a lot of people have heard of deep pressure, you know, where they press on their fingers. So each time you press on a finger, it sends a message to the brain. So that message goes on a pathway. And the more you press, the more mature that pathway gets. So you press on each finger really hard. You press on the arm. Because a lot of times the kids are hyposensitive. They don't feel deep pain enough. So you want to get to the source of pain by pressing on their arms, you know, press and release, all the way to the shoulder and the fingers. And then over time, then that function starts to come that wasn't there just automatically, not with any curriculum, not with a handwriting program, not with a grip, but just the brain's ability to go, oh, there's no fluff there. There's fingers.
I can
move this way. So that's what we're talking about with neurodevelopment. And, you know, we've got the IEPs. I understand the need for individual educational plans. What we create for people are individual neurodevelopmental plans. Ours are meant to bring better function, but we give the activities, just like the deep pressure, like we were just talking about, that makes the pathways that make that possible. So that's kind of the difference in the neurodevelopmental approach, is we're going to get to those educational goals through making the pathways better.
So I know you've shared a lot of stories with us already. I would just love for you to share a couple more, just as encouragement for our families, of some struggles that you have seen in the past, and just how these neurodevelopmental strategies, this approach, has really helped a student overcome those through maybe some avenues that we aren't used to thinking of as an approach for reaching that goal.
So one story would be where a child was labeled ADD. And I have many of these kind of stories, but just this specific one was somebody that had been on Ritalin for almost 5 years. And what we find with children with those labels is they typically have low auditory processing. And sometimes they have some sensory issues, too, that cause their attention to go off. But by far, the auditory processing, that's your auditory short-term memory, it affects so much. It affects the child globally. It affects their ability to stay on task, follow directions. You know, there's a lot of conflict in the home oftentimes because you didn't do what I told you to do. Well, you've got to make sure that your child is able to hold the pieces that you just gave out. You know, are they not able to do five things, but they're able to do two things, you know? So you want to give them two things until you get their processing up. But in the way, one of the ways I'd like to give a tool, if I can, on the Brain Sprints website, I think it's all the way down to the bottom. You can actually test your child's auditory processing. We have a free test kit there. And it will also teach you how to do visual processing. But auditory is so key to these strengths of, like, being able to stay on task and see the picture of a situation, so you're not impulsive and doing things that, you know, you really shouldn't be doing if you saw the big picture. Acting more immature and socially doing things that you know, you wouldn't see in that age child typically. So this is one of the real keys to the neurodevelopment that I think is so life-changing, because like Aaron didn't necessarily just do the processing. He did the whole program. You know, he did some movement to help organize his brain, and he had to change his eye dominance because he was storing information in the wrong place. So it was a global program for him, but in 9 months he wasn't taking any medication anymore. Wow. So that was really huge for that family, because he had, you know, at puberty things changed a lot, and he started having hallucinations on that medication. So it was really, a godsend to be able to get off the medication. Some children really need it, and some need it for a time. But once we get their brain working more efficiently, then oftentimes they can get off of it.
Wow!
That's and then huge. You know, just to go, it really is huge. Just to go on the other spectrum. I had a homeschool mom whose son wanted to go to college, and he had scored a 14 on his ACT. You can't go to college with a 14 on
the ACT.
So she was asking if there was anything that would help. And he just did our basic foundations program that had lower level brain organization, working on his processing and things like that. And he did that for 3.5 months. And then he was able to, he had to take the test again, so he didn't have any longer to program. And he scored a 20.
Wow.
So he went from a 14 to a 20, and it opened his dream of being able to go to college. But you know, there's nothing you can really study for or that kind of thing. It's just like he had the information, but now he was able to utilize it.
Right.
We call it more of an efficient brain.
That's you know, a great way to,
It wasn't working very efficiently before. And so it's things like that and everything in between. I mean, we help families that have children with syndromes and, you know, autism and that kind of thing. But we also really can help the learner that's struggling, that the mom's going, this child is so intelligent in everything else he does, but he can't read.
Right. Or, yes.
You know, so we help find the root of that and help equip the parents on what to do. And you know that being in this work and having homeschooled children with struggles, that home is the very best place
for these children to be.
So just, but if the parents are equipped with really good resources to help change the brain, they make progress even faster. It's been my experience. So that's, I don't know. I guess that really does keep me going. I had, had one mom that, I think the child was 16, and she was having to sit with her all day for every class.
Wow.
To go through this. And this is a child with just typical intelligence, but she was so locked up in her efficiency. I call it kind of like you have a new, brand new computer. It's got all the bells and whistles, but it's plugged into dial up internet.
Right.
So how is it going to work versus how will it work if you put it on high speed internet? Yes. That didn't have anything to do with the brain. It was really smart, but, then it's just those connections and those pathways working right.
A great and that's visual. What,
I want to give this quick little thing because I see so many children with challenges to their self-esteem. You know, they just think they're not smart. I mean, I've had some hit themselves in the forehead and say, dum, 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 or,
it's just
heartbreaking to see that. But so if you will tell your child that they're really smart, but they have trouble, I mean, you're probably already saying that, but they have trouble believing it because they're not functioning very well. Mm-hmm. So if you tell them you're really smart, but your brain is tricking you at the moment, we've got to fix that tricky brain. Mm. Then it kind of puts it off on something else. It's not them.
Right. It's
something else. So oftentimes that really helps them to not be so down on themselves.
Exactly. And, yes.
I see that so much, and it's really hard as a mom to watch that for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're telling them the opposite, but they're not believing you.
Yes.
And so, yes, moving that to a different sphere, really, and just we're focusing on the smart you and the issue that's over there that's plaguing us both.
especially
with your learning. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great advice. So, Jan, where can our viewers find you? You have your website.
Well, yes, brainsprints.com is our website, and we actually offer free consultations for families that just want to let us know where their child is, where the struggle is, because then we can point you to resources better if we know a little bit more about what's going on with the child. So with the free consults, they just fill out a short little questionnaire, so we get a bit of an idea before we talk, so we can utilize all the time for their individual need, and then so that's one resource we have, and then we have a YouTube channel called Brain Coach Tips. They call me the Brain Coach, so we have Brain Coach Tips. So there's lots of things there that they can listen to help with sensory issues, processing, understanding dominance, which has to do with where they're storing information, and just the more about, you know, if you're interested from this, finding out more about the neural approach, you can find things there, and podcasts as well. I've done several talks for SPED, so you can look on those resources. And I just love to get the word out about this, because it's so life-changing, and it just, I don't know, I guess I've said all this time, I spend my days trying to get people to think differently.
That's a hard thing to do when people are very set in their ways, and and so programmed too.
And everybody, everybody else has told them this particular thing. You know, for instance, dyslexia is for a lifetime. You just have to learn to cope and compensate. And what we found is dyslexia is a list of symptoms that are caused by something in the brain that's glitching. You fix those glitches, and they don't have those dyslexic symptoms anymore. So that, you know, just blows people's mind, because all they've heard is dyslexia is forever. And it's the other thing we found is it's never too late. I mean, we've had a lady that was 40, and she got relief from her dyslexic symptoms. So,
wow.
Yeah, I just love this work. I guess you can't tell that.
Yeah, but that's so good. I mean, I just love your passion and the work that you do, and just that you just keep sharing and giving. And for those of you that don't know, Jan is also the vice chair of the SPED Homeschool Board of Directors. So she pours into this organization as well as her own. And we appreciate that, Jan, and just all the incredible work that you're doing around the world now. And so Jan is, she said she was up early this morning meeting people across the country, across the globe. So yes, that's awesome.
We've got a group in Uganda that I'm training to work with their program there, and the kids are just doing really well. They're expanding. The word's getting around on at the village that's the place they want to have their children. So it's
that's cool.
It's really wonderful. But they are 9 hours different, so
absolutely. Well, Jan, again, just appreciate all that you do. Thank you for sharing today and just the wisdom that you had to share. If you're joining us now, I see we have more viewers now than we did at the beginning. Definitely go back and rewatch as soon as we wrap up this video. There's so much good information Jan shared in this hour, and we don't want you to miss it. So pop in for that. Also, for those of you that have been watching for a long time, we just appreciate you being part of our community and joining us every week for these conversations. So I'm going to wrap it up. But Empowering Homeschool Conversations was provided by Sped Homeschool. You can go to spedhomeschool.com to get resources and support for teaching your unique learner at home, including Jan's website is listed on there too. But to help us fund our nonprofit outreach to families home educating diverse learners, please click on the donate button to give a one-time donation or to become a monthly supporter. So take care, everybody, and God bless. And we'll see you back here next week. Until then, bye, everybody.
Bye.
I want to take just a second to thank the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us on this podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you'll find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
This has been Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer.
Hey, everybody, I'm Dale.
And I'm Tamara.
We're hosts of the Kainos Project podcast,
where we help you tackle ancient Christian truths in an everyday settings.
To learn more and subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.